This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. Using the latest in breast milk science, ByHeart created a clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula that's made with organic, grass-fed whole milk, certified clean ingredients, and features a patented protein blend that gets closest to breast milk. Their blend includes the most abundant protein found in breast milk, alpha-lac, as well as lactoferrin, the number one protein found in colostrum. In addition to its patented protein blend, their formula includes prebiotics and an 80-20 whey to casein ratio, like in early breast milk, which is tailor-made for a newborn's digestive system and makes it an easy-to-digest formula. Curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code Dr. Nicole for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
It is a birth story episode. This one is about a long but very fulfilling unmedicated hospital birth. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a board-certified OBGYN physician, certified integrative health coach, and creator of the Birth Preparation Course, an online childbirth education class that will leave you feeling knowledgeable, prepared, confident, and empowered going into your birth. Quick note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. See the full disclaimer at ncrcoaching.com/disclaimer. Well, hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 45, and I'm so glad you are here with me today. So in today's episode, we have a birth story episode. You guys know these are some of my favorite episodes. And today we have Lynn Turcotte-Hsu. She is going to share how she had a completely unmedicated hospital birth. And although it took 53 hours, she is still very happy and satisfied with her experience. And in fact, she was so happy with her experience that she left her job as a marine mammal trainer and founded Happy Mama Wellness, where she is known as the toddler trainer. She's a certified childbirth educator. She's also a parenting coach, and her mission is to help parents better understand themselves and their children so that they can spend less time yelling and more time connecting. Lynn is highly passionate about helping mamas find their power and trust their instincts during pregnancy, birth, and beyond. I had such a great time chatting with her today, and I know you are going to enjoy our conversation as well. Now, before we get into today's episode, let me do a quick listener shout out. This is to one Natalie Gomez, and the title of her review that she left me in Apple Podcast is so thankful. And the review says, "This podcast has been so helpful and informational. I am so thankful for your insight into the world of birth and pregnancy. I wish more doctors and nurses were as up to date on this information as you. This year, my husband and I are trying to conceive, and I already signed up for your birth plan course. I'm sure you have a full plate as a wife, mom, doctor, and now your podcast, but thank you for this. I love it so much. Well, thank you so much for that kind review, one Natalie Gomez. I wish you and your husband well as you start your family this year. It is awesome that you're being so proactive, including signing up for my free class on how to make a birth plan. Now, speaking of that free class, I have an announcement to make about it. I got a lot of feedback that women were interested in the class, but it was hard to make the time. So what I've done is I have converted the class to an on-demand class where it's offered several times each day and you can sign up for a time that works best for you. So just go to ncrcoaching.com/register. Of course, that link will be in the show notes and sign up for the class. It's chock full of information to help you make a birth plan that works, to help you have the birth you want. Women absolutely love this class. It's 100% free. So sign up today. I hope this new way is more convenient for you so you can get this great information. It is not too early to start thinking about making your birth plan. So go ahead and go to ncrcoaching.com/register and sign up for a class. Now, remember, this class is also a great way to kind of check out my signature program, the Birth Preparation Course. The Birth Preparation Course is a comprehensive online childbirth education class that gives you everything you need to be knowledgeable, prepared, confident, and empowered for your hospital birth. You can learn more about the class at ncrcoaching.com/enroll, or definitely check out the free class, ncrcoaching.com/register, to kind of get a feel for it. All right, so let's go ahead and hop into today's birth story episode with Lynn. Well, thanks so much, Lynn, for coming on to the podcast. I am super excited to have you share your birth story with us.
I'm excited to be here and to share my story, for sure.
So why don't you start off by telling us a bit about you and your family?
Sure. So my wife and I have been together for almost 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And I just turned 41, so pretty much half of my lifetime. And we've been married for 10, and we knew from the beginning that we wanted to have children, but obviously we need to have some help. We are missing part of the formula. So our journey before we even got pregnant, we went through about 2 years of just testing and prep work and counseling and all that kind of stuff. So we have one daughter. She's going to turn 6 in 2 weeks. I can't believe it.
Time flies. Yeah.
And then we have one angel baby that is about a year ahead of her. So we had a miscarriage about a year ahead of her. And so other than that, we're pretty a normal family. We have the same experiences as any other married person, any other mom.
There you go.
I hear. Day-to-day.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about your angel baby. I don't think I realized that when we scheduled the interview. How far along were you when you had a miscarriage?
I was about 12 weeks, and it was actually an ectopic pregnancy.
Oh.
So like my numbers were kind of all over the place. They weren't quite sure if it was going to be viable or not. So we spent like, because we were doing,
like insemination, I guess.
Yes. Thank you. So because we were doing that, like you knew the instant we were pregnant, right? Like they're tracking things way earlier than anyone should even be starting to track things.
Right.
And so it was just this roller coaster of like, oh my gosh, we're pregnant. And then, oh, but the number's not good. Oh, but the number got better. Oh, but now it went down. It was just like this crazy three really long 3 months. And they started to suspect that it was an ectopic pregnancy. And so they said, you know, watch for vomiting or abdominal pains and all this kind of stuff. And sure enough, I was at work one day and I started to feel really nauseous and I vomited and I was like, I need to call a doctor. Something just didn't feel right. Like I just knew.
Right.
And we had an ultrasound that day and it confirmed an ectopic pregnancy. So they did the methotrexate injection.
Uh-huh. Yep.
In hindsight, right? Because when you're in the situation, everything's heightened emotions. But In hindsight, I'm so grateful for that because the other option would have been surgery. So we went through that and it took about a week and a half for my HCG levels to drop and the pregnancy to be over. And then we had to wait another 3 or 4 months before we could even try again. But we got pregnant on that very next try with my daughter. And the ectopic pregnancy experience, the motion of it actually is kind of what led me down the more unmedicated natural birthing path in the first place. Cause I was like, I just want to listen to my body. Cause I trust my body. It told me what was going on before. I just want to be able to trust it again.
So. Okay, cool. Yeah. I don't think we do a good enough job of understanding the impact that, of pregnancy loss related to ectopic pregnancy. I don't think we appreciate that enough.
Yeah, I didn't even know what it was. And this is probably getting a little off topic, but I try to be really open about my experiences, even if I get emotional, because I feel like pregnancy loss in general is just not something we discuss. And it mm-hmm. happens so often.
Yeah, it does.
But when we tried to have a second child after my daughter was born, she was about 3. And I went through 7 cycles and we had 3 early miscarriages. In those 7 cycles, but I don't even really like count those as losses in my brain because they were so early. If we had been not doing fertility, I wouldn't have even thought I was pregnant because right. I would have just got married. And so it was very different than the ectopic experience, which we knew that we were pregnant. We weren't sure what was happening. When it came down to it, even though there wasn't really a choice, like in a rational choice, I still felt like I was choosing my life over my baby's, which was really difficult for me.
Sure.
In the moment. So I tried to be really open about that experience because I know there's a lot of other moms going through it. But
yeah, absolutely. That's a really interesting concept. And we are getting off topic a little bit, but I think it's important that of choosing your life over your baby's life. Yeah.
Yeah, which is ridiculous when you think about it, because if we had let the pregnancy go on, neither one of us would have made it. Like,
exactly.
It wasn't an actual choice.
Right. But in the moment, that's what you felt.
Yeah, absolutely. In the moment, I was like, I'm a mom and this is my baby, and I would gladly give my life so that my baby could live.
Right.
So that was kind of where my mindset was, even though that wasn't reality.
Gotcha. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor when she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through, and keeping their delicate skin happy and healthy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick, goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable as the diaper rash itself. Use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel good about making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra premium formula for moms who will not settle when it comes to their little ones. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with simple quality ingredients, no artificial dyes or preservatives, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Head to Amazon.com or Walmart.com to grab Dr. Mom Butt Balm because nothing comes between you and your baby, especially not diaper rash. So, well, I'm glad that you were able to get pregnant fairly quickly after that.
Yeah, we were surprised. Obviously, like a little nervous, but my levels in the pregnancy where we had my daughter, they were tripling in just a few days. So our doctor was very quick to be like, this one's okay. Like, this is nothing like the last one.
Right.
Your numbers are crazy high. Like, this is, you can breathe. Now you're just in normal, like, pregnancy risk. Now you're just where everyone else would be.
Right. So I'm guessing you probably felt some relief when you had that first ultrasound that showed a heartbeat.
Absolutely. We actually saw a heartbeat with the ectopic pregnancy.
Oh.
Just crazy. But to see it in the right place and like see everything being what it was supposed to be was, it was, I can't even describe it, that feeling. It was like relief and excitement and like, oh my gosh, this is real.
Right, like, exactly.
Yeah,
that's unusual to see a heartbeat with an ectopic pregnancy. So you definitely had a little bit of differentness going on there.
Yeah, they were really surprised because that was part of the reason that they were confused, because they kept doing the internal ultrasounds and they could see like a little sac and they could hear the heartbeat, but they're like, that doesn't look like it's in the uterus. And it was just weird. Gotcha. Yeah. Apparently I'm in the exception to all the rules.
So when you find out you're pregnant and things are going well, what did you decide to do for your prenatal care? Did you see a physician? Did you see a midwife? What did you choose?
I knew right away that I wanted to go with a midwife. I feel like, how do I want to put this?
Say it. My feelings won't be hurt if it has something to do with physicians.
It's not that at all. Just in general, I feel like Western medicine doesn't try to get to the root cause of things. I feel like a lot of doctors are just like, let's fix the symptom.
Yep.
And so I tend to look for more middle of the road practitioners that, obviously, Western medicine is needed in some cases, but not in all. And so I try to look for practitioners that see that balance. So I was immediately drawn more to a midwife than an obstetrician. But we were in a practice that had both, so that if there was a complication, if we had to go to cesarean, I had met with the OBs that would be doing that. So that was kind of peace of mind for me.
Got it.
But our primary care was a midwife, and she knew that we wanted to try and go unmedicated, and we really wanted to have a vaginal birth, if at all possible, with minimal interventions. And she was really supportive of all of that.
Awesome. Now, what part of the country are you in?
We live in Connecticut.
Okay. Some parts of the country don't have access to midwives, unfortunately, but
I know.
Yeah. And so, but it's great that you had that option available and felt comfortable with having the backup piece as well. So how did you feel about your prenatal care?
I was really happy with it. There was a couple of visits towards the end of the pregnancy, and I feel like multi-doctor practices try to do this where you kind of rotate through everybody just because you're going to see who's on call, right?
Right. Yep.
And a couple of those visits were really frustrating for me because I had gone through this, you know, my wife and I, a team effort, we had gone through this whole pregnancy, seeing one of the two midwives, and we'd really built up a rapport, and they knew what our vision was, they knew what our hopes were, and then we would randomly get thrown in with this OB towards the end, who we would say things, and they would be like, oh, that's not possible, and I would, in my head, I'd say, but our midwife's been telling us this whole time that, right, like, that was fine. So that was just a little bit confusing.
Sure.
But it wasn't like, it didn't put us off or anything. We just kind of let it roll off of our shoulders. So for the most part, I was really thrilled with the care that we got and that people were actually listening to us. Like, I felt heard, which I think was really important for me.
That's important for every woman. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what are some of the things that you wanted for your birth? And then when you threw out those things, the feedback you got from some of the physicians that was sort of like, okay, like, that's not what we talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of just something right off the top of my head. Okay. So we were very big on not wanting to have any IV fluids unless needed. I was like, I'm sure we're going to talk about this, but we did the Bradley method for childbirth prep. So my wife and I had basically like gone to school, right? For 12 weeks, we were learning about my body and like the process of birth and, you know, all these different things that may or may not happen. And so I felt like I was coming from a semi-educated place. So I had talked to my midwives at length about wanting to really try to stay hydrated orally, right? At home, I would drink plenty of fluids. And when we got to the hospital, because I am not a good patient in the hospital, I knew that going in. And like needles and being hooked up to things, like it just, my anxiety just skyrockets. And so I was coming from that place, knowing that if I got anxious and fearful, here comes the adrenaline and now everything's kind of shot. So from that standpoint, I was like, can we just not, like, the less machines I'm hooked up to, the more calm I'm going to be. That's kind of where.
Yeah. And you were pretty healthy and low risk other than
I was old.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I was gastric at 35.
Which is so rude and disrespectful, the terms that we use. But
I know. But other than that, everything was great. I was healthy. And so one of the OBs, our first appointment with them, it was a great rapport. We were felt comfortable with them. And then they had said something about, well, when you get to the hospital, you'll be on IV fluids anyway, so you don't have to worry about X, Y, or Z. And I said, we are going to just do a heparin lock and hopefully not have to go on fluids. And the OB was like, no, we put everybody on fluids. And I was like, that's not what the midwife said.
It is not necessary. Like, it totally is not necessary. So that's my soapbox moment. But
yay, thank you for that. So that was just an example of what probably seemed completely really little and insignificant to them, that like, that just is just what we do. We just put people on fluids so they aren't dehydrated. To me, I was like, oh my God, now I'm going to be hooked up to an IV pole and I'm going to have to drag this thing around and I'm going to have a needle in me. And like, that like started to just cause anxiety for me. And then the next point, we were back with the midwife and she's like, no, don't pay attention. Like, fine. I'm going to write it down for you. And so, you know, it made it a little bit better. But so it wasn't huge things, but they were huge for me.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And then the conflicting information is, you know, a little bit confusing as well. So I can totally see that. So I'm guessing it sounds like you just wanted lower intervention. So to be not connected to as much stuff as possible, if maybe intermittent monitoring or wireless monitoring if possible. Did you want to do, I'm sure, be able to move around as much as you can?
Yeah, absolutely. When I started looking for a childbirth like prep type course, I had said to my wife that I really wanted a home birth because I wanted to feel safe and I wanted to, you know, make sure that I could keep my body calm and not get into that anxiety state. And my mother, God bless her, actually like literally had an intervention, like literally brought family members to my house and staged an intervention.
Oh, stop. Not the circle of everybody around you.
Legit intervention. And she said, it's not safe. You're going to put yourself and your baby in danger if you have a home birth. And I just was like, what are you talking about? I love you, but you have no idea what you're talking about. I think she was thinking I was just going to go in the backyard and have a baby.
I'm trying not to laugh at the situation.
Yeah, no, it was comical. So I was respectful. Like, right. I tried to be polite and respectful, but at the same time, I was like, no, this is not. I will send you the research. Like, this is not. I was like, I'm still, like, there's still a midwife there. There's still, like, it's not like I'm just in the middle of the woods.
Going out in the woods, right.
Yeah. But after that, my wife came up to me and said, I will do whatever you want, but a home birth makes me a little nervous as well.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, well, your opinion matters. Right. So we sought out Bradley. And so my goal was to kind of have as close to a home birth experience in a hospital setting. That's kind of what my vision was.
Yep. So you decided to use the Bradley method for preparation. How do you feel about that? Or how did it work for you?
It worked great, but I know like in the core of my being that it worked great because my wife and I put in the work ahead of time. So we were super diligent about every single day doing relaxation practice. And, you know, a couple times a week, we would do a labor rehearsal and try out different positions. And we really were like, we are preparing for a marathon and this is the work we need to put in. And I had a really physically strenuous job. And I very vividly remember people being like, oh, let me get that for you. Or let me do this for you. And I'd be like, no, I'm training for a marathon. Get up, like, stop. I need like my body to be strong. Stop trying to do things for me.
Right.
So we really had that mentality about it. And so when the day came, I was physically prepared, mentally prepared, emotionally prepared, because we had put in the work. So I've seen other families, because I taught Bradley for a couple of years. I don't anymore. But I saw a couple families go through it. And they were like, the curriculum helped, but I just didn't feel ready. And so I kind of called them out and said, well, did you do all the stuff we talked about each week? And they'd be like, no, not really. Or, you know, so I feel like with anything in life, that's, you kind of get out what you put in. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's why it worked so well for us. But the curriculum itself was great. And I felt really prepared and educated, for sure.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Got it. So did you do anything else other than Bradley to prepare?
No. Well, we took a hospital tour so okay. that we could visualize where everything was going to happen. I feel like that helped a lot with my anxiety, at least.
Yeah.
But other than that, we just followed the exercises and nutrition and the relaxation stuff that Bradley was providing for us.
Got it. Okay. It sounds like you did so much of the, obviously you were very prepared and you also paid attention to that mental piece and creating the right energy surrounding your birth. Cause that really makes a difference.
I tried hard. So I'm hoping that's what made the difference. Yeah. I hate to think all those hours of effort and practice were really for nothing.
Right, absolutely. So why don't we get into what was your labor and birth like? Let's get all the details.
Yeah, absolutely. It was long. It's really long. But I always tell people when I'm telling my story or sharing my story that I feel like you either have a really short, intense labor or you have like a really long, not super intense labor. Mm. Like, I feel like the faster it goes, the more intense it is.
That's often so true. Yeah.
In some ways, I'm glad that I had such a long labor, but I had, it's prodromal labor. Is that the name of it? Where yep. like really extended early labor. So I was getting real labor contractions, not Braxton Hicks. But they were just sporadic all over the place for about 2 weeks before things kicked into a pattern.
Okay.
And I actually was a marine mammal trainer before I had my daughter. So I was on stage, on microphone, like talking to thousands of people at a time working with sea lions. And I have very, like it was yesterday, kind of memories of having to say into the microphone, you know, and my friend Jen is going to take over for me for just a moment. And I would walk backstage and have a contraction. And then I would come back out on stage and like, be like, and I'm back. And here we go. And just kind of, it was just like a comedy of, it was funny. So,
right.
So I worked right up until really the pattern started to kick in. And I told my supervisor, I said, I'm not coming back. I'm going on my weekend. I'm not coming back. So just know.
Right, right.
This is it. I'll see you in a few months.
And how many weeks were you?
I was 39 weeks. So my daughter came just a week early.
Okay.
So on a Saturday morning, my contractions were starting to get into a good pattern. So they are about like 15, 20 minutes or so apart. So it was something we could actually time at that point. And I made the mistake, talk about lessons. This is one of the lessons. I made the mistake of calling my mom and my sister and telling them that. And they live over an hour away. So that piece of the story will be coming. But I told them, oh, contractions are in a pattern now. So it'll keep you posted. And so my wife and I just were at home and I was just kind of doing whatever my body was telling me. I did a lot of standing. We have like a banister at the bottom of our staircase. I did a lot of just kind of leaning over the banister and swaying back and forth. I was on our birth ball. I was in our tub. Like I just was kind of all over the place, just trying to go about my day and not really get too worked up about anything in either direction. And very, very slowly, the contractions started to come closer together. And then I went to sleep on Saturday night because I was really tired and they didn't stop, but like I could sleep for an hour or two and not really feel anything. So I got a couple hours of sleep on Saturday night And then early on Sunday morning, I woke up and things are getting a little more intense. And so I woke my wife up and I was like, we need to, like, I need you now. I need you to, like, be my coach now. Right. Whereas on Saturday, I was kind of, she was there. And if she tried to leave the house, I was like, where are you going? But I didn't really need her to, like, do anything with me. I just need her to be there. So on Sunday, we were just kind of doing our relaxation stuff that we had practiced, and the contractions continued to get closer and closer together. And around 5 o'clock on Sunday evening, the contractions were about 5 minutes apart, and I started to get nauseous, like really nauseous, and I started to vomit, which is, I now understand, is a good sign, right?
It actually is, yes.
In the moment, you're like, oh my God, can this get worse? But you know, it was a good thing. So after like the second or third time that I had gone into the bathroom, I came out and I looked at my wife. I said, it's time to go. Like, you need it. It's time to go. So we got everything ready, got in the car. We drove to the hospital. We actually called our Bradley instructor on the way to the hospital just to like confirm that we were
right,
ready, doing the right thing. And when we arrived at the hospital, my mother, my aunt, and my sister were in the waiting room as we walked past.
Okay.
Because when I called on Saturday morning, they had come down and rented a hotel room next to the hospital so that they could be there like the second we called and said that. So I kind of like waved and was like, okay, they're here. And I just kept going because I was in my own little thing.
Right.
I was getting really frustrated when we got to the hospital. I feel like at least 10 people, and I'm not really exaggerating, were asking me, do you want a wheelchair? Do you need a wheelchair? And I was like, no, I'm not crippled. Like, right. I'm just pregnant.
Right.
Like, I need to walk. I need to keep moving. Just stop asking me that. But it did take, we had to stop many times on the way to the maternity unit because I was having contractions. So they admitted me, contractions were like really close together. I was about 6 centimeters dilated.
Oh, nice. Face.
Yeah, I was really excited about it. And my daughter was still pretty high up in station. But other than that, they were like, this is great. And the doctor was on call because it was a weekend. He made the mistake of saying, we'll have a baby tonight. So I always say it was his fault. Those were his famous words. So I was, again, really tired, and I was trying to get some sleep, and I honestly don't even remember this nurse's name, and this is not all nurses, because the next shift was amazing, but this one particular nurse, she kept coming in and flipping the lights on in the room and waking me up, because I had the telemetry on, I had the wireless waterproof monitors, so she kept saying, your contractions are like spreading out. That we can't have that happen. And I just kept looking at her and saying, but I'm just tired. Like, I'm just so tired. And so all Sunday night was just this back and forth, back and forth. And I could feel my anxiety going up. I could feel my stress going up.
Right.
And so when the midwife came on shift on Monday morning now, around 8:30, she checked me and I was only 7 centimeters. I'd only gone 1 centimeter overnight. And
so
I was
that
like,
was
I'm
in like,
exhausted.
Oh, like over 12 hours.
Yes.
Like, oh,
yep.
Okay.
So I looked at her and she was like, you look exhausted. What, you know, did you sleep at all last night? And I told her what had happened. And she said, oh no, no, that is not acceptable. She said, I'm turning the lights off. You are getting in the bed and no one is coming in this room for a couple of hours. Like, you will close your eyes. And so I really think that made all the difference because I felt safer. I felt like she was listening to me and like, okay, I can go to sleep. And I literally closed my eyes and I slept for 3 hours straight, even though the contractions were really, they were pretty close together. I just slept right through them because I was so tired.
Wow.
So this is now like around noontime and the midwife comes in and she says, okay, you're 9 centimeters. She's like, you're almost there.
Right.
And she asked if she could break my bag of water. And I said, you know what? I feel really good. That nap really helped. Can we just wait like another hour or so and see where we're at? And she said, absolutely. So I was up. I was moving around. I was like, come on, gravity. let's do this.
Right.
And after about an hour and a half, she came back in. I was still just 9 centimeters. So she broke my bag of water. And the couple of contractions after that were the only ones that I remember thinking to myself, this really hurts. Like, this is really painful. I don't know if I can do this. But after the first couple, I was like, okay, this is just kind of the new normal. And I was able to get on top of them and it didn't, I wasn't stressing out about it.
Gotcha. Now, who was there with you? I know your wife was there. Okay.
Yep, so that's it. Just her.
Okay. And then did your mom and your aunt and your sister just hang out in the waiting room the whole
they
time?
They all were in the waiting room until about, I was told, until about 1 a.m. on Monday morning. And then everybody got sent home because were like, nothing happening.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then I forgot to ask, did you think about having a doula?
We kind of did at the time, but we ended up not getting one. And I always think to myself, like, what differences could have been made? Because I really, and again, this nurse that was there on Sunday night could have been the most wonderful person on the planet. Like, but
she was rude turning on the lights every time she came in the room. Yeah.
So I always think, like, if we'd had a doula that would have advocated for us, like, what would have happened? Mm. Because my wife just didn't feel, she's not confrontational. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't advocating. She was just like, oh, okay. The nurse said, get up. So let's get up. And so she was an incredible coach the rest of the time. I seriously couldn't have done it without her. Like, it was for sure a team effort. But that's the one part that I'm always like,
Gotcha.
Because that's where everything just stalled. And I know that it was because I was just anxious and stressed and not feeling heard. I wasn't feeling supported. I was feeling like no one cared what I was trying to tell them. And I was just another number at that point. And
right.
That you were trying to make things go faster. So I feel like a doula could have really helped in that situation for sure. And I encourage people all the time to check out doulas because they don't replace your coach, right? They're kind of like a third team member.
Exactly.
they fulfill the circle, right? They round out the team.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm a huge advocate for doulas in general.
Okay, gotcha. So you were 9 centimeters. She offered to break your water. You wanted to wait. And then she did, and the contractions went up in intensity.
Yeah, they did, but only for a couple.
Okay.
And then, like I said, I was kind of like, okay, this is now the new normal.
Okay.
And then it took another couple hours before I was fully 10 centimeters dilated because my daughter, she was still really high up. So there wasn't like a ton of pressure from her head. So by the time she was low enough and I was feeling an urge to be pushing and I was fully dilated, it was 5 o'clock in the evening. So I started to push actively at 5 in the evening and I pushed for about 2 hours and my contractions were so spaced out in that stage that I was pretty much losing all of the progress in between the contractions that I had made during the contraction.
Right.
So my midwife said we'd like to start a Pitocin drip to augment the contractions, get them closer together. So instantly I was like, absolutely, because I'm exhausted.
Right.
Like, I just want this. I want her out. I want to be done. Like, I just want to be done. So they started the Pitocin drip, and that was like around 7:30. And it seems like a long time, but I pushed for another two and a half hours after that, and she was out. So
okay. It
seems like that was a long time after the Pitocin, but really, like, there was nothing happening before the Pitocin.
So it's almost like
those hours didn't really count. So she was born at 10:03 p.m. And I just, like, she came out and I had a baby. And then we were in new parent mode. And it wasn't until the next morning when our nurse came back in. And she said, we've been talking about you all morning because that was the longest labor we've ever seen. We clocked you in at 53 hours. And I was like, say what now?
Say who, what, huh?
So in it, I had no clue that it had, like, I was just in the moment. I wasn't keeping track of anything. But afterwards, I was like, oh my goodness, 53 hours. Like, but then I was like, 53 hours? Excuse my French, but I'm a badass. Like, I can do anything. That was amazing.
That is very true. Now, how did you, like, stay? So, okay. So, like, mentally, you weren't, obviously you felt physically tired, but did you feel like, how did you sort of, like, stay in the game during all that long time? Or was it just, like, a moment-to-moment thing?
Practice, because I just kept telling myself, okay, we're just going to focus on this next contraction. Like, I'm not going anywhere else except this next contraction. And I also went into, I knew all of my options for, like, medicinal pain management. And my goal was to be unmedicated, but I was like, I'm not going to be a martyr. Like, if this is really painful, I want to enjoy the experience. So nothing was off the table for me. So I would kind of check in with myself for each contraction, say, okay, at the end of it, can I do another one of those? And my answer was always yes. But I had told myself ahead of time, if I ever answer no, then I'll ask for help. So it was just like this moment to moment. I just took things one contraction at a time. And that was really all, like, I didn't really think about anything else. I had a playlist. Music is really, we're a very musical family. So I just, like, if I started to feel really stressed, I would put on certain songs. Or if I was starting to, like, lose my gusto, I would put on, like, you know, like a song like Happy. I'd put on, like, a song like that, and I'd start dancing a little bit and, like, get myself energized again. And so it really was just moment to moment. That's why I was so surprised when the nurse came in that next morning. Because I was like, I feel like it was just a couple hours.
Right.
But I just was not thinking about it in those terms.
Wow. Now, that's just a really long time. But it's something that I hear commonly for women who do a medicated birth who are successful with it, is that you take it moment by moment, and then you don't realize how long or how much time it takes. Yeah.
It really, no concept, like zero. Just was doing what I was doing.
Right. Now, do you remember whether or not the contractions with the Pitocin felt different or stronger? I think contractions on Pitocin feel a little bit more intense, but I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I definitely remember them being more intense. And I remember when I was pushing before they gave the Pitocin, I could feel the contraction building, like, you know how it kind of, like, it builds up to that peak. I could feel that process.
Right.
But after the Pitocin, I remember this, that they just kind of came. Like, I didn't have as much of a warning that they, like, it just went from, like, 0 to 100.
Gotcha.
And so before the Pitocin, I would do my, you know, 2 breaths. Like, I'd breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe, and then I would get myself ready. But the Pitocin contractions, I'd be like, oh my gosh, it's here. Right. I'd just be like, okay, here we go.
Okay.
But it wasn't, like, it didn't hurt more, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I think it just felt more intense for me because I didn't have that time to work up to it. It just was like, here it is, here we go.
Okay. Back in the day when my girls were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones, but you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated in the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that there's no third-party ads, no unwanted eyes. Now, let me share some of the great features that make the Family Album app a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature about the Family Album app is you can order 8 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by ads when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you are still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. And then I presume they did skin to skin and delayed core clamping.
Yes, at the time, which this is only 6 years ago, so this tells us how far things have come, right? But at the time, our hospital did not do skin to skin as standard protocol. So we had to really advocate for that.
Right.
And we had to really push for them to delay the clamping of the cord. They were like, no, that we don't do that here. I was like, but you can, right?
Right.
There's no reason you can't.
Right. And even the midwife didn't either?
Yeah. That wasn't their protocol at the time.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So she was the one that was another one of the things that she was like, yeah, there's no reason we can't. We just don't usually. And then the OB came back and said, we don't do that. I was like, well, you're going to do it this time.
Right. Like,
we've already talked about it and you can. And right. So that's happening. Yeah. But now that same team at the same hospital, because I see my midwife that was with me when I gave birth to my daughter. She's now my gynecologist. See her. And so we talk about this stuff all the time. And she's always like, you wouldn't believe how fast things have changed. Like, this is standard now. This is standard now. This is, you know, and people don't have to fight for it anymore. So that makes
awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So overall, do you feel like you were happy with your experience? It sounds like it.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried really hard not to have expectations going in. My goal was to have a really empowering experience that would allow me to trust myself and my instincts as a parent. Like, that was really important to me, that I could listen to my body and listen to what my instincts were telling me during the birth process, so that as a parent, I knew that if I listened to my instincts, that was the right course. And that's exactly what happened for me. You know, we didn't have a completely intervention-free birth, but at each step, we did what felt as the right choice for us in that moment. And so I don't regret anything that happened. The only thing that I might go back and change again was that overnight, where the nurse kept waking me up, like, have a doula present, tell my wife to get her big confrontational pants on, or like, right. I don't know.
I know what you mean. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Everything else, I was great during the whole thing. Like, I was healthy. We didn't have any medical complications. My daughter didn't have any issues with stress. Like, her heart rate was great the whole time. The medical team was beyond supportive. That nurse and the midwife that started their shift at 8:30 that morning, they stayed over their shift to be there when my daughter was born at 10.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Like, it just was, I felt so supported, and just like almost like my extended family was there in the room, because we just had that rapport throughout the process.
So you felt like that second nurse was just much better in terms of.
For sure. We still have coffee.
Aww.
I keep in touch with her. Like, really, truly, that made the whole difference for me, was having her there and the fact that she was hearing me and, you know, letting me do what I wanted to do in terms of, like, you're running the show, but like, hearing what my feelings were, what my concerns were, and saying, okay, what if we do this or this, and then helping us figure out that decision. So
exactly.
Yeah.
There is nothing in this world like a good labor nurse. It can make all the difference in the experience. And I think people don't necessarily appreciate how important a labor nurse's role is, because she's the one who's there actually most of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. It made a huge difference. I don't even want to think about.
Yeah.
And overnight, if she had been the one during the day, and like when my daughter was born, I can't even imagine it would have been completely different because I wouldn't have felt safe and supported. I would have been on edge and feeling anxious, and I have no idea how it would have turned out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Feeling safe, feeling supported are just so important. Your body works so much better with the process of labor if you're feeling safe and supported in the moment.
Yeah, I feel like it's so important. And I thought that's just how it went. Like, oh, this is what everybody experiences.
Yeah,
and
no.
I had such an incredible birth experience that I moved on. I never went back to my job as a marine mammal trainer. I actually became a childbirth educator because of that, the experience I had. And my eyes were like, they got opened big time because I realized how lucky I was. Because it is not the norm. Like, I was the exception. And that made me really sad, to be honest.
For sure.
So I try as much as I can to share my story without being judgmental. Because everyone's going to have different choices and preferences. And, you know, I don't do well in hospital. But another mom maybe would be freaking out at home and wants all the bells and whistles and machines to be present.
Sure.
So everyone is going to be different. And I just really try to make sure that moms know that they have the power, that, you know, it's their experience, their decisions, and do what I can, because I don't want to be the exception anymore.
Exactly.
I want what I experienced to be the rule. So that's kind of my vision.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. I love that. Now, if you had to pick like your top couple things that you learned during your pregnancy and your birth that you'd like to share, what would those be? I think it's really cool how it totally transformed, like your birth transformed like your whole life. I mean, you have a new job now.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. I think number one in the pregnancy part, my mentality was, I am not sick, I'm pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to, like, obviously I'm not going to go horseback riding.
Right.
Like, limit my activities. I don't need to, you know, be a blob on the couch. If I'm tired, then I'm going to sit, but I don't need to force myself to do anything specific. I'm going to stay active. I'm going to, you know, keep doing the things that make me happy and feel good. And so I just had that. A, I'm not sick, I'm pregnant, and B, I'm preparing for a marathon. And those two things made such a huge difference. So I feel like when you're pregnant, sometimes people treat you like you're sick.
Right.
So if you, like, as the mom, if you cannot follow that lead and not think of yourself in that way, I feel like that would make a huge difference.
I agree.
And then during the labor, I think the biggest lesson, and this kind of just goes with life in general for me now, honestly, is to just take it one contraction at a time.
Yeah.
Like, take it one moment at a time, one day at a time, especially some days in parenting. Woo.
Yeah. Right? Oh, girl, who you telling? Okay. Like, just this morning it was.
So like, just having that mentality of, you know, one breakfast at a time, like, we're going to get through breakfast and then we'll see how we are for that. And then we'll get through lunch. So just not projecting so far out into the future, just being in the moment. And can I handle what's happening right now? Great.
Right.
And from there, those are probably two biggest takeaways.
Those are great, great things to keep in mind and for women to know. Now, are there any other resources that you'd like to share that you've come across that you've found helpful either during your pregnancy or since you've now become a childbirth educator?
Yeah. I love the Spinning Babies website.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have the opportunity to use it when I was pregnant, but I feel like I don't send people there and say, hey, try this at home kind of thing.
Right.
But I feel like there's so much really great information on that website and conversation starters, because I feel like everything's so behind closed doors with labor and birth that we just have this vision of what it's like in the movies, and
that, which is not realistic. Not at all realistic.
So,
yes.
So people are like, oh, I'm going to be on the bed hooked up to, you know, a million machines, and I'm going to pull my knees up to my ears, and that's how you give birth. And so I feel like the Spinning Baby site just gives you so many different perspectives and alternatives and, you know, just different things to do. So I really like that resource. And just in general, a childbirth class, I feel like is probably the best resource. And even I'm always like, because I work at a hospital, I teach at a hospital. But I also have an online course that I had created. So I'm always like, I don't care if you're doing it with me, but do it with somebody.
Right. Like, I agree.
Take a course with somebody because you don't know what you don't know. And the more you understand what's normal and what you can expect and, you know, what options might come at you, the more tools that you have, all of that equals less anxiety and most likely a labor that's going to progress better and an experience that's going to feel better. So
exactly.
I feel like the biggest resource just in general is taking a class, regardless of where you take it from.
Yeah, I agree for sure. There are lots of different options. Obviously, you know, I have an option. If you have an option, you have to find what works best for you. You're going to click with different people and styles and all that kind of stuff. But for sure, just find a childbirth education class, please.
Yes, yes. I read a statistic last year that it said like only 20 or 25% of new parents take a class. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, yeah. People research buying a new car more than they research having a baby.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. And in the system that folks are giving birth in, really a childbirth education class is key.
Yeah, I totally agree. So that's one of the reasons that I really was drawn. I found you on Instagram, but I was just drawn to your account because the content you're posting and the words, it was like, you're in my head. Like, you're so just on the same page about, especially that it doesn't matter how your baby comes into the world. What matters is that you feel supported and you feel safe and you feel like you had, like that you are the one that was in the driver's seat and things weren't done to you, right? Like all that kind of stuff. I feel like we're in alignment.
Absolutely. And along those lines, why don't you tell us where folks can find you? Because we need to connect and work together. And guys, you can reach out and find different people who have, of course, those supportive messages. I don't think women can hear that enough during pregnancy. So tell us where women, can connect with you and some of the things that you're working on.
Absolutely. My services have kind of morphed as my child has grown. So I still have that online childbirth course, but it's actually now part of a membership community that I have. So I now do parent coaching. Like, it just keeps changing as I get into new phases with her. But everything, all the information about me, how to work with me, other resources can be found on my website, which is happymamawellness.com. And I'm constantly updating that with new stuff. So that's the best place to go.
Okay, awesome. And we'll link to that in the show notes. Well, thank you so much, Lynn, for agreeing to come onto the podcast and share your story. You have such lovely energy, and I'm really glad that you came on.
Me too. This was wonderful. And I love sharing my story. So thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Wasn't that great? I really love Lynn's energy and her passion. Now, one thing I asked her after we finished recording that I forgot to ask while we were recording is, did she get pressured to get pain medication or an epidural? And the truth is, she did say that she got asked a lot whether or not she wanted medication or an epidural. And she said, actually, her wife was really helpful in this regard and being kind of like a gatekeeper to keep that pressure off so she didn't feel like she had to get it. So that was one thing I wanted to mention that I forgot to ask during the episode. All right. Now, you know, after every episode, I do something called Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top 3 or 4 takeaways from the episode. So here are my notes from my conversation with Lynn. All right. Number one, think about having a doula to advocate for you. Lynn mentioned how things maybe would have been a little bit different if she had a doula who could have advocated for her, especially she talked about around that instance of having the nurse who kept turning on the lights in the room. And I think that's a great example of where a doula can either speak up for you or sometimes that can be a little tricky because maybe it puts doulas in a little bit of an uncomfortable situation, like where they're talking to the hospital staff. Not all doulas feel as comfortable doing that. but a more experienced doula will, or they can also just say, like, when, you know, when it's a quiet moment in the room, say, hey, you know, next time she comes in, maybe you can say, or ask your partner to say, do you mind not turning on the lights when you come in? So kind of giving you that language to help you or your partner speak up. So again, having a doula to advocate for you, whether they speak on your behalf or whether they help give you the language to speak up as well. All right, number two, Lynn talked about the importance of feeling safe and supported during your labor. This is so important, y'all. This is very, very important. Your labor goes so much better. It's smoother, you know, I would even say easier if you feel like you are safe and supported. When there is fear or mistrust surrounding your labor, your body just does not work as well. The process does not go the same. So it's really important that you feel safe and supported during your labor. Now, a really important part of doing that is point number three that I'm going to talk about and that Lynn mentioned as well, and that is getting prepared for your birth. You definitely need to take some time and educate yourself before your birth. There are lots of options out there. Lynn said she did the Bradley method. There are lots of options out there and you have to find which option works best for you, but you definitely need to do some type of childbirth education. Of course, I have my signature program, the birth preparation course, but again, like I said, there are other options that work for folks and you just have to do a little bit of research, but please, please take the time to invest in some good comprehensive childbirth education. That is the best way in order to have that great energy surrounding your birth, to feel safe, to feel supported, to feel empowered going into your birth. So I cannot stress that enough. All right. So that is it for this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast in Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you feel so inclined, I would love it if you leave that review for me, especially in Apple Podcasts. That helps other women find the show. It helps the show to grow. And like I said, I love giving a listener shout out. So leave that review for me in Apple Podcasts if you don't mind. I would be most, most appreciative. Now, next week on the podcast, I am going to do an overview of all the tests that are done during pregnancy and why each of those tests are done. This came from a question that somebody posed in my Facebook group community. As a matter of fact, if you're not part of that group, you should join it. It's All About Pregnancy and Birth community on Facebook. I can link to it in the show notes. And what I'm going to do in the episode is talk about all the tests that are done. I've created a handy guide that you can download as well, so you can have that information handy for you. So be sure to come on back next week. And until then, I wish you a healthy and happy pregnancy and birth. Today's episode is brought to you by Women's Wellness Coaching by Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins. Head to ncrcoaching.com to check out my free 1-hour mini course on how to make your birth plan, as well as my comprehensive online childbirth education class, the Birth Preparation Course. With over 8 hours of content and a private course community, the Birth Preparation Course will leave you knowledgeable, prepared, confident, and empowered going into your birth. Head to ncrcoaching.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.